Welcome to Patients at Risk, a discussion of the dangers that patients face when physicians are replaced with non-physician practitioners. I'm your host, Dr. Rebecca Bernard, and I'm the co-author of the book Patients at Risk and the author of the follow-up book, Imposter Doctors. Today, we are going to be revisiting Doctors' Day, which was March 30th, and I hope that everyone out there had a great Doctors' Day. We did an episode in June of 2021 about healthcare systems hijacking Doctors' Day instead of simply celebrating a day for physicians, took the opportunity to also thank, quote, providers or other clinicians, non-physicians, and many physicians feel, number one, that it's insulting and hurtful that physicians are not entitled to our own day, especially considering that there are days, in fact, weeks, dedicated to nurses, to nurse practitioners, to physician assistants. And on those days, physicians are certainly not included or celebrated with the non-physician clinicians. It just seems nonsensical that physicians don't get one day dedicated to their role. And in that original episode, Dr. Marcia Haley, a radiation oncologist, talked about an article that she wrote about misappropriation of Doctors' Day. I'd like to share some of that podcast. You can find the entire podcast if you go back to episode 33 of Patients at Risk. And then after that, we'll fast forward to today, 3 years later, and see what, if anything, has changed in response to physicians' outcry that Doctors' Day be dedicated to the work of physicians. Here's Dr. Marcia Haley.
Doctors' Day was established on March 30th, 1933, in Winder, Georgia, by Eudora Almond, wife of Dr. Charles B. Almond. The date is the first anniversary of a doctor using ether anesthesia by Dr. Crawford W. Long. The first observance included mailing greeting cards and placing flowers on the graves of deceased doctors, including Dr. Long. On October 30, 1990, President Bush signed Resolution No. 366, which became public law, designating March 30th as National Doctors' Day to honor the contribution of physicians who serve our country.
It's a big deal. It has been since 1933. And the idea is, like so many other days that we celebrate, Mother's Day and Administrative Professionals Day, it's Doctors' Day. It's the day that we say thank you for going to med school and doing all these things. And Marcia, what was it that got you a little hot under the collar when you saw that facilities were adding other groups to physicians for Doctors' Day?
Well, there were a couple of reasons. One is that my institution was very good to us, not so much in material things, but sending us emails and phone calls and letting us know that we were appreciated as physicians, as part of the whole healthcare team, but they highlighted our unique contribution to patient care, just like we do for Nurses Week and all the other weeks and days that we have for specific healthcare practitioners. It's important to honor physicians on that special day and honor physicians alone.
And Marcia, you pointed out in the letter to the editor that you wrote that doctors today are facing a lot of burnout and moral injury. And you felt that by not recognizing doctors, at least giving them the one day that's supposed to be reserved for them, that that actually contributes to moral injury. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, medicine is changing in a way that is negatively affecting doctors. Governmental policies and reimbursements have made it extremely difficult for physicians to own their own practices. So now most physicians have lost autonomy and are now employees of corporate medical groups. In many cases, the takeover of local hospitals by these corporate groups has led to prioritizing profits above the well-being of patients and staff. For example, since 2019, dozens of doctors have left medical centers over concerns for patient safety. Doctors have been fired and replaced with, quote, providers who did not attend medical school or residency and have been fired for doing things like exercising their professional judgment. Stressful work settings, work-life challenges, lack of support, exhaustion, lack of autonomy, and longer work hours are all contributing to the rising physician suicide rate, which is twice that of the general population. So any support that we can give to our physician colleagues, I believe, is very important for these moral support and to give them the support that they need.
Now, here's my co-host, Dr. Naran Alajba, discussing a Twitter post by Johns Hopkins, which set off a firestorm of controversy on Doctor's Day.
During COVID-19, we are thankful now more than ever to have not only our doctors, but also nurses, PAs, environmental services, and other healthcare workers by our side at Johns Hopkins Medicine. We are grateful to all of our staff who are on the front lines during COVID-19. Hashtag National Doctors Day. I completely agree with the sentiment behind the post. Of course, we're grateful to every person on the team, but they actually have weeks that they get to celebrate, and we have like one day. This from one of our very important institutions came out. So I'm so glad you wrote about it, because I think you're right. I think it's just one more nail in the coffin.
What was interesting was that Johns Hopkins got so much criticism from physicians and others that they actually revised their post. And so what they wrote is, we are revising this post due to feedback we've received from our community and the doctors that we so very much value and respect. Our intention in the original post was to be inclusive of other important members of our patient care teams due to previously received feedback. We recognize that this has deeply offended doctors, those that are intended to be celebrated on Doctors' Day. And for that, we sincerely apologize. That was not our intention.
I thought it was very good that so many people jumped on that post and commented, because it wasn't just physicians that noticed that it was tone deaf toward doctors. Many nurses commented, many other healthcare professionals, and also patients and members of the general public realized that it was tone deaf, which I think was a great thing. The thing that bothered me the most, though, was that physicians felt hurt by this. They felt ignored by this and comments like it. And one physician, which really affected me, said that this tells me that this healthcare institution doesn't value their physicians. They don't give due recognition to their hardworking, burned out physicians who have sacrificed blood, sweat, and tears so that Johns Hopkins can be ranked a top hospital. And I heard this over and over again during Doctors Week by doctors that their institutions either gave tone deaf messages, such as dear practitioners, dear providers, happy Providers Day, you know, really not recognizing physicians. And so I am glad that Hopkins got called out on it. And I hope that other healthcare institutions will take note and really take that one day to recognize their doctors appropriately.
Why do you think it is that these institutions are not able to give physicians any recognition or acknowledgement even on their own day?
That's a really good question. And again, I think it speaks to this broader appropriation of the word doctor. And nowadays in clinics, just because someone refers to themselves as a doctor doesn't mean they're a physician. And in many ways that we've talked about on this podcast before, this benefits the healthcare system, because if they don't have to hire physicians to, say, cover clinics or cover the ER, this can be financially beneficial to them. And so that professional confusion is beneficial to the healthcare system in many ways. And so I think that's, it's part of a broader narrative that we've seen in probably the past 10 years.
Right. And I think it comes back, we have to talk about the provider thing again, because we'll put up on our YouTube the next screenshot that we have, which is from Emblem Health. And it says, "Thank you, providers, celebrating providers on National Doctors' Day."
When you strip the title of people who have worked their tail off for a decade to save the lives of patients, I think people think it's about ego. And I want to be really clear that I don't really care what you call me. I really care that you understand who I am and what I've done to get where I am, to be at the bedside saving your life. And so I think it does us a disservice, and it leads to exactly what Marsha's talking about, which is the burnout, the dissatisfaction, frankly, the why did I do this? And the problem is, people may not think about it until they go into that hospital and there isn't a doctor there, or the emergency room, which we are getting to the point where there will not be doctors in the emergency room. People keep saying every day to me, why aren't there any family docs? Why aren't there any internal medicine docs? And I said, no one wants to do this job. I love my job, but who's going to do this job? And in 20 years, there won't be anyone and you won't have a doctor. And people will say, well, I don't understand. Why are they retiring? Well, this is why.
I would like to fast forward now. It's been 3 years since we aired that episode. And what has happened since then? Has there been any change? And the good news is that I can report that yes, there has been some positive change in this area. In fact, we can look at Johns Hopkins, which is one of the organizations that we critiqued in the original podcast, because their tweets really were somewhat egregious. And in fact, many on Twitter called them out. And it seems as if they have committed to some change. And here I'm looking at a tweet from Johns Hopkins Medicine on March 30th, 2024. And it says, in honor of National Doctors' Day, please share a story about a doctor who inspires you. And then there's a picture and it says, a day to honor our physicians. To all our doctors, thank you for your enduring inspiration and commitment to world-class patient care. We honor and appreciate you today and every day. And that's really, honestly, that touches my heart. That's very kind. And that is exactly what physicians need to see. Also, UW Medicine, Department of Radiology, put up a sign in their hospital facility that says National Doctors' Day. This day offers an opportunity for healthcare institutions and patients to express their gratitude and appreciation for the tireless efforts of physicians. Thank you to our valued doctors. I have here a really beautiful message that I really want to share because, again, it's very touching. This is from Mosaic Life Care, and they sent out a message saying, thank you, physicians, National Doctors' Day. How often can you really say thank you for all the ways physicians have touched the lives of you, your family, and friends? Every day in the life of a physician is worthy of recognition. But today, especially in honor of National Doctors' Day, we want to thank all physicians at Mosaic Life Care. Take a look at a special message from caregivers all across the organization and shout out the physician in your life. And then they go on to have, again, just such a beautiful message. It says, our physicians heal, inspire, engage, challenge, and care for us in very important times. Upon the birth of a child, as a loved one's health is fully regained, as a loved one breathes their last breath. But how often can you really say thank you? Thank you for going through years of schooling. Thank you for promising to heal and do no harm. Thank you for accepting immense responsibility. Thank you for the many times you put your life on hold so we can get our lives back on track. Thank you for listening. Every day in the life of a physician is worthy of recognition, but today, especially in honor of National Doctors' Day, we want to thank all physicians at Mosaic. It's really, honestly, it's so touching, and it means so much just to get these simple messages. Unfortunately, not every organization has gotten on board yet. Here is a post that was sent to me from Mass General Brigham. Happy Doctors' Day at Newton Wellesley Hospital. And what it says here, this is a letter that went out to patients, actually a solicitation for, I think, a financial donation from patients. And what it says here is, dear friend, it's Doctors' Day, and here at Newton Wellesley Hospital, we are proud of our extraordinary family of caregivers who work tirelessly for you and all our patients. Do you have a caregiver you'd like to recognize and honor? Consider making a gift now. To our dedicated doctors, nurses, and hundreds of other staff, you are their why. And it goes on to say, thank you for joining with me in showing our caregivers that we appreciate and support them all day, every day, through a message of gratitude and a gift to Newton Wellesley today. And some doctors have reported, you know, feeling a little uncomfortable with the fact that of course, it's supposed to be a day to celebrate and honor doctors, but instead it's asking for financial donations to the hospital in honor of that day. And of course, calling us physicians, it's just referring to us as caregivers. Here is University of Cincinnati Physicians College of Medicine. They posted, Doctors' Day gives us an opportunity to celebrate and thank the more than 1,500 UCP physicians and other healthcare providers that compassionately and tirelessly care for our patients every day. And then they go on to say that they are giving all of their healthcare providers a customized power bank that you will receive from your department administrator. Thanks so much. And here's Envision Healthcare. They are definitely a major culprit of trying to normalize providers and putting physicians together with non-physician practitioners. And of course, here is a very typical message from them. Envision colleagues, as we celebrate Doctors' Day and all our physicians and advanced practice providers, I want to thank you for caring deeply for each other, our patients, and our communities. Signed by the Chief Medical Officer, Joshua Aaron Bloomstone, MD. There was also a thoughtless message from Piedmont Health, which said, at Piedmont, we celebrate all our doctors and providers that make a positive difference in every life they touch, and again, asking for a donation. We are asking you to join us in saying thank you to them with a gift to the Piedmont Neurosciences Fund. You can let your special doctor or healthcare provider know how much you appreciate their commitment to providing safe, high-quality care. And what's interesting is that this gift here, it says that it will support Piedmont's neurology initiatives, neurology nursing, and physician education. Again, the big issue here is it's Doctor's Day. It's not Provider's Day. There is Nurses Week. There is Nurses Day. There is CRNA Week, etc., etc. And there's just one Doctor's Day. So why not, as Marsha Haley writes, why not give doctors their day? Just to recap for those who don't know, or for those of us who are farther away from our training, let's take a trip down memory lane and remember what it took to become a physician. It takes a Herculean effort, and it starts from very early on. 4 years of college. A bachelor's degree can be in anything, but you do have to complete the core science rotations. For me, I remember general chemistry 1 and 2, organic chemistry 1 and 2, and I will say organic 2 just about broke me, just about kept me out of medical school. It was so intensely difficult. Of course, those also had labs associated. Biology 1 and 2, physics 1 and 2, another one that really was hard for me. Biochemistry, calculus. I'm so thankful to my college boyfriend who was an electrical engineering major, because without him, again, I would not have gotten into medical school because I would never have gotten through that semester of calculus. I remember many, many sleepless nights studying and just not knowing if I was going to be able to get through that class. Then, of course, you have to take your MCAT exam, which is the pre-medical admission test. It takes a lot of studying. It's a very intense exam. You have to meet a certain score to even be considered for medical school. Then you have medical school applications and interviews, and it's, you know, there just are not enough slots for the people that want to become physicians, and even for those who meet the criteria. So it really is people with the top scores. But also, now especially, you also have to be doing other things aside from school, extracurricular activities. You have to have a personality and be able to interact with others. There's just so much that goes into being accepted, and that's just the beginning. You get into medical school. For me, that first year was incredibly grueling. I almost did not pass gross anatomy. I was totally unprepared for how difficult that course was going to be and what the exam was going to be like. I remember I studied very hard for the test, but I didn't know how to study. I studied the cadaver that we dissected in our anatomy lab, basically in anatomical position, the hands facing up in a supine position. And I didn't know or expect that they would, instead of laying out the body the way that I had studied it, they would take off the arm and they would twist it around and put it in a totally different position. And as you heard from me, I wasn't very good at calculus or physics. I'm not really a very geometric thinker. And so just even, you know, having that 3D thinking of turning the anatomy around I was totally unprepared for that. Further, I wasn't prepared for the exam to not just say, what is this structure? What does it do? But to incorporate other parts of our studies, for example, embryology, you know, the tag would be in the part of the body and it would say, what is the embryological root of this structure? So it was so incredibly challenging and difficult. And I remember I failed that first exam abysmally, just horribly. And I just remember feeling so dejected and hopeless. And I thought, there's no way I'm going to pass. And fortunately, for those of us that failed, and I certainly wasn't the only one, they gave us tutors, and then I learned how to study, and thank God I was able to pass, although it took a lot of time and effort. I was able to pass the next two exams and pass gross anatomy. And that was a big deal, because if you failed gross anatomy, you failed the whole year, and you would have to repeat the year, which meant another year's worth of expenses of tuition and living expenses without knowing for sure that you would pass and have anything to show for it. So that first year for me was one of the hardest. And then, of course, the second year, more studies. And then our big United States medical licensing exam, step one, which covered the basic sciences and a lot of people feel is probably the most difficult of the three steps. And they gave us a month to study for that. And I remember going into the law library, because it was much nicer than our medical school library, and going in like it was a full-time job, getting there around 8 in the morning, studying till noon, taking a 30-minute lunch break, back to study again until 5 or 6, dinner break, and then back home studying again into the night, and doing that day in and day out, no days off for a month. And then being so grateful to pass that step one so that we can move into our clinical years. And then we had the third and the fourth year of medical school, which were our clinical rotations. I remember for me, the worst were the surgical rotations. I've never been great on lack of sleep. And of course, you're up all night and into the next day. I remember being called in for trauma cases when a patient would come in by helicopter or brought in by ambulance. And as a medical student, your job was just to assist in whatever way the surgeon wanted you to. Usually that meant retracting or holding open the body part that the surgeon was operating on so that the surgeon had a good view of the surgical field. And of course, that wasn't a passive job. You actually had to put a lot of muscle work and effort into retracting or holding open that area so that the surgeon could see. And so it was actually quite physical, and it would go on for hours and hours under these hot operating lights. And I remember sometimes feeling kind of woozy and lightheaded and nauseated and thinking like, maybe I might faint. I hope I don't faint and embarrass myself. And that could be the end of my medical career, even though I knew I did not want to be a surgeon because that just wasn't the type of life I could imagine leading. And I thank so much those colleagues of mine that did choose that profession because it is so physically demanding. And then, of course, after you finish those rotations in medical school, and it's not over when you graduate, now you're just beginning to learn, and now you go into your residency. I chose family medicine, and in those days, that was before work hour restrictions, although the residents still work an incredible and insane number of hours. But in my day, there was really no limit. And it wasn't uncommon for us to work 80 to 100 hours a week and be on call every other night, especially during holidays, and stay up all night and work into the next day and just be bleary-eyed and exhausted and emotional. But we went through all of those rigors because that's what it took for us to learn our profession, to learn our trade, to even begin to think about the things that could be going wrong in the human body, to consider differential diagnosis, and to know the first steps of how to respond and what to do. Of course, residency goes on for at least 3 years for those of us in primary care fields, and those who do surgical fields or subspecialties can go on 4, 5, 6, 7 years of intense training. It's highly competitive, and the work might lighten a little bit through those years, but it's never easy. It's always much, much more than a full-time job. Of course, then you take your board examinations and you can be board certified in your specialty. And that is what it takes to be a physician. It is completely different from any other field of healthcare. It is not to disrespect or undermine the work that other clinicians go through to learn their skills and that they are absolutely essential, but it is unique. And there is a reason why we honor physicians on National Doctors Day. And I want to say thank you to everyone out there for the work that you did. It means something, it's valuable, it's essential, and it was worth it. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you'd like to learn more about this topic, I encourage you to get the books Patients at Risk and Imposter Doctors. They're available at Amazon and at barnesandnoble.com. If you're a physician and you'd like to learn more about our mission, which is advocating for physician-led care for all patients and truth and transparency among healthcare practitioners, please join the group Physicians for Patient Protection. You can learn more at our website, physiciansforpatientprotection.org. Thanks so much, and we'll see you on the next podcast.